This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
You could say we've got a show of trends today. Beauty industry trends, TikTok trends, and now even a tax season trend. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Rima Reis and for Kai Rizdal. It is Monday, January 17th. Thanks for joining us. We're going to get started today with a warning from the IRS, a warning that this tax season is going to get a little messy, a little complicated, if you will. While you can officially start filing next week, the IRS is scrambling to get ready. In December, the agency still had 6 million unprocessed individual returns from last year. It's a backlog that could lead to even more delays this year. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab gives us a preview of tax season.
Larry Gray is a CPA in Southern Missouri, and some of his clients still haven't gotten their tax refunds from last year.
And the sad thing is that anytime we slow down the refunds, that impacts the taxpayer and their family.
Not just their finances, but their ability to file accurately this year. And for the IRS, a backlog will make processing returns harder for years to come.
This does have the potential to snowball.
Garrett Watson at the Tax Foundation says many of the delays last year were with paper returns. Mail deliveries were slow, staffing shortages meant there were fewer people to open up all those envelopes and enter data into computers. Plus, with the rollout of COVID relief programs came changes to the tax code.
So not only has the IRS dealt with these pandemic disruptions, but they've also had to turn on a dime to administer important forms of support like the stimulus payments or the expanded child tax credit.
That didn't just bring changes for the IRS, but changes for taxpayers who had lots of questions. The IRS received a record number of calls last year, more than 280 million. It was only able to answer about 10% of them. This year's taxes will include another round of stimulus checks and changes to the child tax credit. Janet Holtzblatt is with the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center.
That's also going to provoke a lot of questions taxpayers have. So I would anticipate that this is going to be another year of record numbers of phone calls coming into the IRS.
This year, Holtzblatt says file early and electronically and have a bit of patience.
Patience is a virtue when it will come to the IRS, but not all of us can afford patience when expecting refunds.
The National Retail Federation's Tax Returns Data Center says last year, most consumers planned to put their refunds into savings or pay for everyday expenses or pay off debt. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Wall Street was closed today in honor of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, so we'll have some other figures when we do the numbers. China's economy grew 8.1% last year. That's according to government figures that came out today. Some of that growth was pushed by exports to Americans, you know, being stuck indoors and buying more electronics and things for the home. Now, inside China, retail sales grew 12.5% from the previous year. But the country's consumer spending isn't actually as robust as it seems. Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pack explains.
China's National Statistics Bureau says retail sales only increased by 3.9% last year if you compare it to pre-pandemic figures in 2019. Consumer spending has been sluggish since the summer, in part because there were mass layoffs in sectors like education. And then there's China's zero COVID policy. Entire cities have gone into lockdown for just a handful of cases. Travel has become unpredictable, and so Chinese consumers stayed put. Restaurants and catering sales went up by 18.6%. Unlike the U.S., consumers in China have not been handed money by their government. Those in low-skilled jobs are most vulnerable because a sudden lockdown can cut their monthly wages in half. It'll be hard to get consumers to spend more this year. Property sales remain weak, and that affects everything in China. Plus, the Omicron variant has been detected in several cities. People are now being discouraged from traveling to their hometowns for the upcoming Lunar New Year holiday, normally peak consumption time. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Okay, so question for you. What do Jennifer Lopez, Selena Gomez, Rihanna, Drew Barrymore, and Alicia Keys have in common, besides all being very famous? Maybe it is not so obvious, but all five of them have their very own beauty brands. And honestly, that is a super, super condensed list. The beauty industry, as we've talked about on this program, is enormous. Last year, it was valued at more than $500 billion. And more, we're seeing celebrities drop their own skincare and makeup lines. So much so that it's become a bit of a running joke. Like when Lady Gaga released her makeup company back in 2019. Well, I'll just let you hear how she advertised it.
The last thing the world needs is another beauty brand. But that's too bad.
So what is up with this trend? To talk about it, I got Cheryl Wishover on the phone. She's a reporter who covers the beauty industry. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, Cheryl, I was at Sephora the other week picking up some usual stuff and getting a gift for a friend. And I remember I had to get help because I was just so overwhelmed by all of the options. I was seeing all these celebrity beauty brands I hadn't seen before. And I'm curious, you cover this topic. Do you also feel like sometimes there are just too many to keep up with?
Yes.
Right?
It's almost a weekly occurrence that I get a press release for someone new launching a brand, for sure.
So why has this become the new norm? Why are there so many celebrity beauty brands out there?
There are less barriers than ever right now to be able to launch a beauty brand. And that's not only for celebrities, that's for anybody. Mm. And I think celebrities have gotten away from doing just straight beauty spokesperson type thing, you know, face of Maybelline,
right,
which they still do. But I think they think that it's more authentic to not shill someone else's product and to have your own. Mm. I also think you can potentially make more money. And also beauty right now is no longer as niche maybe as it used to be. A lot more people are interested in it. So for all of those reasons, I think brands are really attractive.
That's so real. I just started using moisturizer every day just because of social media, because I was seeing all these like TikToks and Instagrams. So how does this work exactly? How do celebrities go about making a beauty brand?
A lot of them utilize beauty incubators. There are dozens and dozens, yes, of these incubators now who can provide manufacturers, who can help with finding packaging, who can even provide, you know, executive teams. And then they will work with the celebrity to sort of talk about their vision and how they want the thing to look. And then they take it and do kind of the work. What I find very interesting is that in the last couple of years, the agent side of it have kind of gotten involved. Like CAA hasn't invested in a beauty incubator of their own so that they can like funnel their clients right into that. Beauty incubators are by far the sort of biggest vehicle right now.
Right. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
So I want to get more specific. Like, what is it about the beauty industry that makes it especially lucrative?
Beauty has a really, really high margin, like huge margin. So I interviewed a beauty founder whose brand no longer exists several years ago, and she sort of walked me through the process of what a lipstick actually costs to make. And she said it was about $2.50. And if you go to, you know, Sephora, what are you paying for lipstick?
$2.50, let me tell you.
You know, No, $30, right. $40, even, you know, $18 is like a huge mm-hmm. markup. And celebrities, if they are big enough and have a big enough social media platform, they don't have to do traditional advertising, right. which is saves a huge amount of money. So that's even more profit.
Right, right. And from a consumer's perspective, you know, how do you think seeing all these celebrities rush to become beauty moguls impacts their willingness to buy from them?
Yeah. So that's a question I have asked mm-hmm. a lot of sources that I've spoken to, and I get mixed answers on this. And I think people are influenced to an extent, mm-hmm. but I also think there's a lot of probably fatigue happening. I think the situation where celebrities are feeling like it's more authentic to have their own brand is now feeling like, oh, okay, another brand,
right.
you know, what
is it authentic?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Do you see a slowdown in new celebrity beauty lines anytime soon?
Honestly, no. Mm. I think it's going to be interesting to see who actually gets these sort of big exits, you know, like a Kylie. Everyone points to Kylie Jenner. You know, she sold hers for, or sold a majority stake for $600 million and then sold the rest of it to Coty later. You haven't really seen that happen with any other celebrities yet, although it's early days. You know, it often takes like five sure. years to a decade to grow a brand. So it's really hard to say. But I don't think it's going to stop, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Cheryl Wishover is a freelance beauty reporter. Cheryl, it was great talking to you.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Coming up.
Business has been pretty crazy.
Sounds promising. But first, let's do the numbers. U.S. markets were closed today in observance of the holiday. For many, a long weekend means a chance to travel, or at least that's what it used to mean in the before times. And while more people are traveling, the numbers are still short of pre-pandemic levels. The TSA says it cleared over 1.4 million air travelers on Saturday at the nation's airports. That is more than double the number of passengers it cleared for the same day last year, but it is still 20% less than the same day 2 years ago. For those of y'all on the road, according to AAA, the national average for gas per gallon is $3.31. A year ago today, it was $2.38. I mentioned earlier that China's economy grew about 8% last year. China became the first major economy to cut interest rates this year once the new growth figures were released. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Now. Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Rima Khreis. Sticking with today's theme of trends, let's take a minute now to talk about higher education. Last fall, the number of students enrolling in college fell by about 3%, or nearly 500,000. That's according to new data from the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center. And over the last 2 years, since the pandemic started, about 1 million fewer students have enrolled in college. Marketplace's Samantha Fields explains what's going on.
There have been drops across the board in the number of students enrolling in college since the pandemic began, but community colleges have been the hardest hit. Their enrollment is down more than 13%.
That is a tremendous amount of students.
Morralee Keller is with the nonprofit National College Attainment Network. Most notably, she says,
what we're seeing is drops in enrollment in low-income and first-generation students.
Students who already faced hurdles in applying and going to college before the pandemic. Shalima Henderson works with low-income and first-generation students in New York City through the nonprofit College Access Research in Action.
Those students are less likely to go because there's more barriers.
And she says those barriers have only gotten bigger in the last 2 years.
Students have had to do more at home or had to pick up more responsibilities or reconsidering college or wanting to wait until things are in person.
She says some low-income students whose families are struggling financially because of the pandemic have also decided to work and make money instead of spending money to go to college, at least for now. For many students, too, having so much of their junior and senior years of high school be virtual has been hugely disruptive, says Shirley M. Collado at the nonprofit College Track.
You're talking about students who could not get instruction, could not be on a computer, did not have access to food or housing in some circumstances.
Without access to in-person support from teachers and college counselors, a lot of those students have struggled to navigate the process of applying to college. So far this year, the number of students who have filled out the FAFSA, or Free Application for Federal Student Aid, which is required if you want any financial aid, is about the same as it was this time last year. Not worse, but not better either. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
One of the most popular apps out there to help you learn a new language is Duolingo. And if you head over to the official TikTok account for Duolingo and you scroll back a few months, you'll find a lot of videos like this.
Hi, TikTok. It's me, Kayfel. Today, let's deconstruct this Japanese sentence. 私の猫は弁護士です.
Makes sense for a language app, right? But now, if you look at some of their more recent content, well, you could say it's a little different. Like, take this, for example, in which a giant fuzzy green owl, seriously, it's huge, chases a group of employees set to remixed audio from Netflix's Squid Game.
Green light. Run fast.
Videos like that, featuring Duolingo's giant green owl mascot and lots of niche cultural references, drove Duolingo's follower count to more than 2 million. Zaria Parvez is Duolingo's social media coordinator and the creative force behind its viral TikTok account. Zaria, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, so I admittedly spend an embarrassing amount of time on TikTok and I'm very familiar with Duolingo's presence on the app. But for people who don't use TikTok or understand its language, how would you describe what Duolingo has been posting these past few months?
Okay, good question. I would say Duolingo has been absolutely unhinged. Like, our content is a lot of Dua Lipa fangirling, mm-hmm. funny memes that probably have like five too many layers of the internet on it. Just having a good time, honestly, and doing things you wouldn't expect a language learning app to do.
Right. Yeah, it's a little hard to convey over an interview. You kind of have to watch the videos. But yeah, like, they're goofy, they're funny, they are unhinged, as you say. And well, I'm curious how it started. Did you all like have a strategy meeting and you were sitting around a table and you were like, okay, how can we go viral?
Absolutely not. So how it started was the Duo Owl sits behind the marketing team. And so this was actually my first job out of college, right? So this is like my first time in like a proper workplace, like, you know, the big guys coming in. And then all of a sudden I just see this owl here and everyone's acting like it's dead normal that this huge mascot just hangs around. And I just thought that whole concept was super funny. And so I gave my boss my phone. I was like, hey, do you want to just film this quick TikTok? And it just took off and people loved it because it was just relatable content.
Yeah, it's very different than what you might see on a TV commercial or any sort of professionally produced corporate video. I've noticed you've made some jokey videos about Duolingo's lawyers or executives blowing up your phone after seeing some of the content you've posted. But like in all seriousness, are there people at the company who don't quite understand what you're doing?
So funny enough, I think a lot of the company has no idea or doesn't understand what we're doing, but they're supportive of like me engaging with this audience because they trust that like, all right, Zari is Gen Z. Like we hired her for this role. So let's just keep going with it. I remember like week two after this going viral, like one of the first things everyone said, they're like, we're here with you during your success. But if there is a moment where like something crossed the line too much, like we are also here behind you and we're here to support you regardless. And I just think that helped a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary to post on social media. Like, I don't post on TikTok because I'm afraid I'm going to come across as like an out of touch, awkward millennial who nobody wants to watch. but are you afraid that you're going to post something that feels cringe or doesn't quite land, especially since the trends on the app are moving so quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, it's happened. Like, if you look at some of our videos that don't have the highest amount of views, yeah, they're like, we don't understand what you're saying. And it's like, cool, moving on.
How do you think TikTok is changing the voice that companies have online?
Yeah. So this is something, I'm not sure if I coined this or I read this somewhere, but whatever. I kind of call it this thing. It's called the Wendy's effect, in my opinion, where I'm sure we all know about like Wendy's on Twitter. And that was like a really big time for millennials.
Right. Just to clarify, Wendy's Twitter account had this big impact on the way companies act online. It had this really sassy online personality.
Totally. And so TikTok is still in its origin story, I believe. And I think we were searching for that. Like, okay, where's this big moment? Where is this going to happen? And I would like to think Duo kind of brought that to TikTok in a way that like no other brand was doing before. And I'm not sure if it was because no brand wanted to do it, but it was more like, this is a new place. No one really knows exactly what to do. Like even when we started, we were struggling. We weren't exactly sure what's going to resonate. And this worked because Gen Z wants authentic POVs. They want people to have fun. And like, they don't want to be sold to. So this ended up being successful.
Yeah, I feel like the authenticity thing is key, especially on TikTok. Going back to what you were saying about Wendy's, I feel like in the last decade or so, we've seen more and more businesses develop these really super distinct online personalities. You know, they're not just these automated bots. They sound like, I don't know, they sound more like your cool friends. I think that shows just how much social media management has matured as a profession. And I'm curious how you think it'll continue to evolve.
Yeah, I think it's so dependent also on like the platform they're showing up on, right? So like what the next platform will be. The way I like to think about it is like, Instagram is how you'd probably talk to like a colleague. Facebook is how you talk to your like grandma. And TikTok's how you talk to like a close friend. And so I think it'll change, but I think people are going more towards this authentic viewpoint. And I'm hoping like if the next platform asks for even more authenticity or they want to see the face behind the actual social media manager, just like keep pushing the envelope to be more real and just acknowledge where we're at in the world, I guess.
Totally. Zaria Parvez is the social media coordinator at Duolingo. Thanks so much, Zaria.
Thank you so much for having me.
Small businesses have really gone through it during this pandemic, but for some business owners, with operations considered essential, they somehow were able to pull through in the midst of all this chaos. And that brings us to our latest installment of our series, My Economy.
I'm Erin Gomes. I am the owner and operator of Bavarium Auto Works in Mountain View, and I live in California.
We do all mechanic work, so engine replacements, transmission, basic services, oil changes, basically everything except bodywork and smog. So business has been pretty crazy, considering that 2 weeks after opening, COVID happened and everybody went to shelter in place. We were considered essential, so we were able to keep the doors, not literally doors open. Those have been closed quite a bit, but we've been able to stay in business. Being a mom and running a business and a toddler and a newborn in the same household while I am working from home, it is very difficult. While I'm answering phone calls, I'm teaching her ABCs in between phone calls and emails, but we make it through every day as best as we can. Parts availability has been very difficult with every manufacturer car that we work with. We mainly work with European cars, BMW, Mercedes, Audi, Porsche, Mini Cooper. They used to come over within a day. You know, we could order it and get it within a day, but we're finding some crucial parts to cars, things to keep the cars on the road, are on back order. I have a customer that needed an ignition coil for his Mercedes, and Mercedes was telling me flat out that they have zero status for us. They could be months and the car was not drivable. Luckily, we found another source, so we were able to get them back on the road within a relatively quick time, considering. But parts availability has been awful for all of us lately. Future plans are hire more people so that I can get more cars worked on, build more relationships, and I just want to build the business bigger and be able to have some help for me so that I'm able to do to take in more work, because currently it's pretty difficult handling most of it on my own. But I would like to hire more people, be able to make more car owners happy.
That was Erin Gomes out of Mountain View, California. We, of course, cannot do this series without you. So please, please let us know what's going on in your economy. You can do that by heading over to marketplace.org/myeconomy. This final note on the way out today, saw this report from Oxfam this morning with some pretty shocking numbers on a topic that has become not so shocking, and that is inequality on this planet. But here are the numbers. Since the pandemic began, a new billionaire, that's with a B, is created every 26 hours. Billionaires have seen a record surge in their wealth these last couple of years. Meanwhile, more than 160 million people are estimated to have been pushed into poverty during this pandemic. All right, we've got to go in a second, but not before your moment of economic context on this Monday. There's a new study out shared by the National Bureau of Economic Research. It is about the government's Paycheck Protection Program, otherwise known as PPP. It shows where the bulk of that loan money went. They estimate that up to 34% of the PPP dollars went to workers who would have otherwise lost their jobs. And the rest of that loan money, the majority of it, went into the pockets of either the company's owners or their shareholders. Our daily production team includes Anais Amin, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Rima Jerez, and we'll see you tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.